This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
A Bannon bounce. President Trump's controversial aide is out and the markets cheer initially, but then fall back. What will it take to calm jittery investors?
Disrupting Hollywood? Who would have thought that Apple, one of the biggest companies in the world, would be the one to change the movie business?
Going dark. The nation's solar power grid will be put to the test when the country sees rare daytime darkness on Monday. It's the eclipse. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Friday, August 18th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Washington holds its grip on Wall Street. Today's stock swung when it was learned that the president's controversial advisor, Steve Bannon, was out. It was a dramatic, if not necessarily unexpected, departure. He is the man who helped Donald Trump win the White House, but who also clashed with other senior presidential advisors on a number of issues, including top economic ones like trade. This week, he also gave an eyebrow-raising interview where he argued that an economic war with China had already begun and that there is no military solution to North Korea. Some say his departure could break the legislative logjam, something Wall Street may like if it means pushing through the president's pro-growth policies.
And that may be why stocks initially rose on word of Mr. Bannon's ouster. But the gains fizzled in choppy trading. Today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 76 points to 21,674. NASDAQ was off 5, S&P 500 down a modest 4. And it was the second week in a row during which all of the major indexes fell, as you see there. Bob Pisani has reaction on Wall Street to the events in D.C.
It was a very nervous open. Trading was mixed early on, but at 11:18 a.m. Eastern time, word came from Washington news site Axios that the White House was prepared to fire controversial White House aide Steve Bannon. The S&P, which was down 5 points, promptly rallied in a matter of minutes and another 5 points over the next hour. When the New York Times confirmed that Bannon had been fired at about 12:40 p.m. Eastern time, stocks rose further. The markets have spoken, and they clearly prefer White House economic advisor Gary Cohn for the stability that he provides. How much? Well, stocks dropped yesterday on erroneous reports Cohn might leave the White House and have rallied on confirmation that his arch nemesis, Bannon, is now gone. The important thing here is traders wanted a concerted effort to raise the debt ceiling and pass a budget resolution and then move rapidly to tax cuts. Today's rally is the market's way of saying that they believe tax cuts are still very much alive. Now, the S&P weakened after 1 p.m. Eastern time, shortly after Breitbart's senior editor Joel Pollack tweeted hashtag war, implying Bannon and or Breitbart may launch attacks against Cohn, as well as Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. Still, the S&P finished slightly lower, and that can be considered a modest victory for the bulls, but there's no clear turnaround right now. So this is still very much a show-me market. We'll see what happens on Monday. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
So will the departure of Steve Bannon calm increasingly nervous investors? Back with us tonight is Jeff Bush with the Washington Update. It's great to see you again, Jeff. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
What is your take on what happened today insofar as it might either hurt or hinder the president's agenda getting through the D.C. roadblock that it's been up against?
Well, I think Steve Bannon's departure, like so many things in politics, there's not a 100% positive or 100% negative. On the positive side, the president should start hearing a more consistent position from his administration, and hopefully that will transition or translate into a consistent policy position for the administration. On the other side of the coin, though, nothing about Steve Bannon's departure changes Donald Trump's core beliefs. And if you're a Democrat or even some moderate Republicans, that's what you're really focused on right now is Donald Trump's core beliefs. Now, from a market perspective, I think this is net-net more positive than negative, but not a huge issue, really.
You know, let's broaden it out a little bit, if we might, Jeff, and talk about all of the turmoil that's been going on these past few weeks. Who said August was going to be a quiet month? It hasn't been. It never is. But right. I wonder whether all of the turmoil could possibly cause the factions in the GOP on Capitol Hill and inside the White House to really focus with laser-like intensity on getting something done.
Well, we talked about this Wednesday, really, in the sense that we expected a lot of volatility in the marketplace throughout September, and a lot of that volatility is going to be what we call politically induced volatility. And so we anticipate more of that throughout this year. Will it bring laser focus to what they're doing? I certainly hope so. There aren't enough legislative days in September to really deal with the big issues that need to be dealt with, the budget being one, and certainly the raising of the debt ceiling.
Speaking of which, that was one thing that you mentioned on Wednesday that could probably concerns you more than some of the other issues that we discussed that evening. Does Mr. Bannon's departure, do you think, help or hurt Washington's ability to raise that debt ceiling or to meet the deadline?
You know, I don't think it has a huge impact. I really don't. I think legislative infighting within the Republican Party, not unlike what we saw throughout the Affordable Care Act repeal and replace discussion, mm-hmm. is going to have much more impact on that issue.
So as we turn the corner after Labor Day into the real work, what are the three things that you're going to be watching closest for progress?
Debt ceiling, do we have a dialogue about that that's constructive and leading quickly to resolution on that issue? And how quickly are we moving budget issues through the legislative process? Remember, we have very few legislative days before the end of September. And so I don't disagree that the risk of a potential government shutdown, a short-term shutdown, continues to ratchet up a little bit as we move forward. Not really a Steve Bannon issue, again, more of a congressional issue.
On that note, Jeff, thanks again for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Jeff Bush with the Washington Update.
Americans are feeling good about the economy. According to the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index, optimism is near a 13-year high. Surveys like this are watched closely by economists because the better people feel, the more they spend, in theory. And spending accounts for a big part of U.S. economic activity.
Negotiations to modernize the North American Free Trade Agreement continued today. Representatives from the U.S., Canada, and Mexico began discussing some of the thorniest issues just days before the conclusion of the initial round of talks. And whatever changes are made, transportation companies could see the biggest impact because they are the ones that transport goods across the border. Morgan Brennan has our story.
For those companies moving autos and avocados around North America, cross-border trade between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada has been a story of growth, especially to the south. Werner Enterprises is the biggest U.S. truckload carrier doing business to and from Mexico. CEO Derek Leather says that now accounts for 15% of Werner's total.
Business is good. You know, business has been picking up throughout the first quarter and had further strengthening in the second. Mexico in particular has been a trading partner of strength relative to trucking. We've seen more flows year over year. Again, it's been the 10th straight year for us of growth in Mexico and the southern border.
Leathers and many others welcome changes to NAFTA, if it means modernization, including e-commerce and automated border crossings. But they also warn that if the pact just disappears, all three economies would suffer. UPS and FedEx have been outspoken as well, with rival shippers' CEOs recently co-authoring an op-ed. Earlier this week, UPS Chief David Abney said he's encouraged that the Trump administration is looking to make updates.
Trade, we think, is such an opportunity for the U.S. You know, 95% of the world's consumers live outside the U.S., so we really believe that we need to focus on exports. And every time the U.S. has added a trade agreement, we've seen our exports from our customers increase 20%.
More exports, more jobs. Analysts say trade with Canada and Mexico helps drum up demand across many modes of transport.
Well, because of the magnitude of the trading relationship we have with those economies, you see literally massive amounts of truck freight back and forth across the Canadian border, back and forth across the Mexican border. And you also see a large amount of rail freight. There's a smaller amount of air freight and parcel freight, but it's primarily a trucking and railroad story.
Every major railroad does business with Canada. And south of the border, Union Pacific also owns part of a Mexican railroad. And Kansas City Southern has one of its own. That Mexican business accounts for more than half of Kansas City Southern's profit. The reason that stock has become a proxy for relations between the two countries. Shares sold off when Trump was elected president. But as it increasingly seems likely the trade talks won't be as tough as originally feared, they've rallied. a sign, perhaps, that cross-border business will continue to boom. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Morgan Brennan.
And today, the U.S. formally launched an investigation into China's alleged theft of American intellectual property. As we reported, the move was widely expected. It is the administration's first direct measure against Chinese trade practices and says theft of such property could amount to as much as $600 million. China has said that it will defend its interests.
Trade is one of the president's top priorities. Bringing jobs back to the U.S. is another. And progress was made on that front today. Wisconsin's state assembly approved a $3 billion tax break package that would bring a Foxconn plant to its state. The bill now heads to the Wisconsin Senate. As we reported, Foxconn, best known for its role in manufacturing Apple's iPhones, has agreed to build a $10 billion plant in the state, but it requires the approval of certain tax incentives.
Coming up, why this week's Market Monitor says when it comes to your portfolio, it's time to think like a nerd. He'll explain.
A rough day and a rough week for shares of some major movie theater chains. Today, there are reports that Apple and Hollywood Studios are discussing the possibility of creating a video-on-demand format that would release films just weeks after they open in theaters. That sent shares of Regal, AMC, and Cinemark all lower. This follows a story we told you about earlier this week that Apple hopes to become a real player in Hollywood, reportedly investing $1 billion in original content. So is Apple trying to disrupt the movie business? With us now is ComScore's Paul Dagarabedian. Paul, welcome. Good to have you with us. So what is Apple up to here? Yeah.
Well, I think Apple has a tremendous amount of resources, and when you have $1 billion to put into content, I think it shows that these huge companies realize that there is a massive demand for content, both on the big screen and the small screen. So there's a lot of confidence that audiences around the world want this content. They want movies, they want original television programs, and they want them on every device, everywhere they are. And that's what Apple is trying to do, including the movie theater space.
What about the movie theater space, Paul? Because in the past, they've kind of called the shots. Is this not a way for the major studios to gain more control or at least leverage over them?
I think that's part of it. And obviously, at this point, there's no consensus among all the major studios as to what they want to do. And obviously, theaters don't want to have this window shrink any more than it already has over the past many years. And the whole idea of premium video on demand at a $30 or $50 price point 2 weeks after a film's theatrical release, that's obviously concerning to the theater owners. That being said, I think this will shake out over time. And irrespective of how this goes, certainly the small screen and big screen content is something that people still want. And maybe the way they get that content will change, but I think the movie theater is here to stay, and I think the small screen content is here to stay. If you're a consumer of the big screen, you also want small screen content, and vice versa.
Paul, what is the typical window today? In other words, what is the time between the theatrical release and the time it might show up on demand or in some video service like a Netflix or one of the ones you get through your cable company?
Yeah, it's actually shortened over the years. It used to be like 6 months. It's shortened a bit to 3 months. And I think everyone would agree that if a film is in a theater and it's not filling seats after a month or two, that to get it onto the small screen might be advantageous for everyone. But there is a prestige factor in having films in a theater first, having that window, and then moving to the small screen. And a lot of audiences will follow that content from the big screen to the small screen. And all this talk about the movie industry and upheaval is because at this moment, the box office is down, but I've been doing this for 25 years, and at ComScore, we track all this information, and we've seen over the years it ebbs and flows. When we get to Thor Ragnarok and Justice League and The Last Jedi at the end of the year, we may be singing a completely different tune.
Paul, thanks very much. Have a great weekend. Paul Dagarabedian with ComScore.
Investors run from Foot Locker. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The athletic apparel retailer reported earnings that fell far below Wall Street expectations. Foot Locker cited a slowdown in the sales of some top styles, as well as the limited availability of new products in the market. The company says it expects sales to continue to fall for the remainder of the year. Foot Locker shares plummeted 28% to $34.38. Hibbett Sports reported a drop in earnings and a more than 9% drop in sales. The athletic wear company said it expected the difficult retail environment to persist and cut its full-year guidance for 2018. Hibbett Sports fell 5% to $10.90.
Deere posted a higher profit, but a second straight quarter of lower-than-expected sales. Improving market conditions around the world, especially in South America, led the tractor maker to boost its full-year equipment sales forecast, though. Wall Street, though, focused on those sales numbers, and Deere shares fell nearly 5.5% to $117.31. Estee Lauder posted higher-than-expected results thanks to strong sales from its Mac and Tom Ford brands. A strong performance overseas, especially in Italy and China, also helped. The company also forecast full-year profit and sales ahead of Wall Street targets. Lauder shares touched an all-time high, ending up nearly 8% on a rather flattish day at $105.92.
And it's time for this week's Market Monitor, who says the market's been run by the cool kids. Now it's time to look for the nerdy kids. He's Richard Steinberg, president of Steinberg Global Asset Management. Here's a look at how his previous picks have done, 2 out of 3. With Cerner and Allergan up strongly, it was a bit of a miss with Ensign Group. Welcome back, Richard. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you.
So when you say the cool kids have been running the stock market, you're talking about the FANG stocks, the Facebooks,
yeah,
Apple.
It's like the old high school maxim, you know, the cool kids want, you know, the cool toys. And that's what Facebook and Apple and Amazon and Netflix and Google represent. Right. So a big chunk of the S&P's returns this year were coming from a very small amount of the cool kids. And as the market sells off, those are going to be the first names where people are going to take profits. Mm-hmm. And they should be looking for companies that are more value oriented that might have been beaten up in this earnings cycle, because companies that missed or even did OK sold off on the news.
So let's talk about some nerds, shall we? Shire Pharmaceuticals. I don't know that they'd like being called that, but they're $150 right now or thereabouts. You see them going to 220. And so far over the past year, they're down 27%. Why do you like them?
Yeah, it's a biopharmaceutical company based in Dublin. They basically have orphan drugs, hemophilia drugs, and ADHD drugs. Adderall is one of their drugs. And there's been a lot of competition in the hemophilia space. Stock, like you said, is gotten hammered. It's now trading at 10 times earnings. We think on a risk-reward basis, it makes sense to own it here.
All right. Your second stock is called Americo, but it's probably better known for its U-Haul.
Exactly. The U-Haul business is a great business, great franchise, both in moving and in storage. Amazing management. We have a $480 target. And if you take their earnings and you normalize them, they could earn close to $24. So we think it's cheap and it's a great long-term growth story.
Your third pick is NCR, which you think has 40% upside potential. They're the maker of ATMs and other automated products.
Right. So the three of us have been in the business long enough. That's the old National Cash Register.
Right.
that dates us a little bit. Yeah. And the automation story and also kind of the movement more to the software side, especially as retailers and big boxes need to compete against Amazon. We think the stock is super cheap. We have a $50 target. And that's really a deep value play. If you're patient and you have a long time horizon, we think you'll get rewarded there.
On that note, Richard, thanks so much for joining us again. Have a good weekend.
Good to see you.
Richard Steinberg with Steinberg Global Asset Management.
And coming up, what happens to solar power during an eclipse? We will find out Monday.
Monday's total solar eclipse could cost employers nearly $700 million in lost productivity. That's according to the outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. That firm predicts that roughly 87 million workers will be at work come eclipse time, and it estimates that each worker will need about 20 minutes to find a viewing spot.
I'm just going to walk outside. It's going to take me 20 minutes, man. It's not just spectators who are getting ready to view the eclipse, but also the people who run California's electric grid. That's because the state is home to almost half of all the solar power in the country. What happens when the sun goes away? Money will bring an unusual challenge, and Aditi Roy reports from Novato, California.
This solar farm on a hilly, remote area in Novato, California, has 6,000 solar panels pointing towards the sun. It's enough to power 300 homes a year. But during Monday's solar eclipse, that number will be cut by 75%.
It's a fun challenge for us.
Byron Vosburg works for Marin Clean Energy, the local utility in this area. He says they've been planning for this event for months.
Luckily, we've got a lot of notice. You know, we've known this is coming for, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of years, right? They've had phone calls, conference calls. They've a million emails back and forth, making sure that everyone's on the same page.
They're not the only ones. Officials at California's Independent System Operator, or CAISO, which runs the state's power grid, project the eclipse will affect solar power between 9 a.m. and noon Pacific time. During that window, they'll lose enough solar energy to supply 6 million homes. Officials say they'll rely more heavily on other energy sources, like hydroelectric and wind power. California is not the only state to grapple with the issue. The U.S. Energy Information Administration says hundreds of solar plants in states like North Carolina and Georgia will lose 90% of their power because of where those states are situated. They don't expect any disruptions in service, but they do urge residents to watch their energy use during the eclipse.
California's grid officials say they had a real-life case study to work from. In 2015, Germany, which relies even more heavily on solar power, went through a similar eclipse and made it through smoothly. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, Novato, California.
The cars are rare, they're antique, and they're vintage, and some will sell for millions this weekend at Pebble Beach. But the auction comes at a time when the high-end collectible car market is hitting the brakes. Robert Frank has our story from Pebble Beach.
Pebble Beach is the Super Bowl of car collecting. Tens of thousands of people come to the Monterey area to show, drive, race, and buy and sell cars. This year, more than 1,100 cars worth more than $290 million will be sold. That would be down from last year and mark the third straight year for a decline in sales. Now, the high end of the market, those multi-million dollar Ferraris, Porsches, and Mercedes are faring the worst as concerns about the stock market, Washington, and tax reform are weighing on the minds of most of the high-end buyers. The speculators and investors who bid up prices 3 years ago have also left the market.
At the high end, it's a little bit of this wait and see. They're waiting to see, you know, what's going to happen, what's going to come up. And yet, when very good cars come to market, everybody comes out to take a shot at them.
Now, the strongest part of the classic car market right now is cars at $100,000 or less. So it's the Japanese cars. It's cars from the 1980s and 90s. And, of course, the classic American muscle cars, like this 1969 Chevy Camaro, that could sell for between $75,000 and $90,000. Experts say everyday collectors are back in the market, in part because of the stronger job market and wage gains.
For the average collector who has one or two cars that are in that $30,000 to $100,000 range, it's the consumer confidence. It's that I'm feeling better about the economy, I'm feeling better about my personal finances, my future, my retirement income, my 401k. That gives me, you know, the comfort to come out and use a little expendable income and buy a treasure.
The most expensive car likely to sell this week will be this, a 1956 Aston Martin DBR1, one of only six built that could fetch over $20 million. A supercar once owned by boxing champ Floyd Mayweather, this Koenigsegg is selling for up to $2.7 million. The real star of the week is the racing Porsche, used in Steve McQueen's movie Le Mans. His cars sell for huge premiums, and this one's likely to become the most expensive Porsche ever sold, fetching up to $16 million. That would top his on-screen and on-track rival, Paul Newman, whose race car that he used in Le Mans sold for only $4.4 million last year. That shows that McQueen races on despite a slowing market. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Robert Frank in Pebble Beach, California.
And finally tonight, the Powerball jackpot is now worth more than $500 million. So if you're feeling lucky, you've got till tomorrow night to buy tickets and dream about what you'd do with all that money.
I would travel the world. I would also pay off my friend's student debt. Pay off some debt, have the kids set up for college, take a nice long vacation.
Help others, give to charity, but come on, we know what I would really do, and that's take a great trip. Have a good time, take care of my family, but I would probably give a lot of it away.
And now we're not trying to throw cold water on your money dreams, but of course the odds of matching all five numbers in the Powerball number are about 1 in 293 million. I got to go buy some tickets.
I've got mine.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to go down to the little bodega.
I'm also in the office pool.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, but I'll share. It'll be fine.
There will be fighting.
No, there will be no fighting. That's Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for watching.
I'm Tyler Matheson. Thanks for me as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday.